crackling, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look at the Arnold Palmer Invitational for PGA DFS, breaking down the studs are prioritizing, and so much more for this weekend. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, Arnold Palmer Invitational coming up this weekend. No Tiger Woods, as he has withdrawn already, but still a pretty loaded field. How are you doing today?
I'm excited. I mean, we're coming off a Keith Mitchell win. I played so much Keith Mitchell over the past few months, but I unfortunately did not really have him.
Nor did I
this past week. But we have the Arnold Palmer, which is loaded, and then right on to the players. So
yeah,
it's a pretty fun time.
There'd be some money on the line coming up. We did not have Keith Mitchell, but we talked to Brooks Koepka. He got a runner-up finish. Lucas Glover was in contention late. He finished fourth. So, you know, Keith Mitchell, I think we can, yeah, we can take some ownership here, given the fact we've discussed in the past. It did not happen when he won, but hey, you know, I can be liberal with our kudos because this is our podcast. We make the rules. So why not? And congrats to Keith Mitchell, too, because it's pretty cool to see him win that.
Yeah, and his caddy, Crunchy Pete, or whatever that is. He looks like Tommy Fleetwood with, like, bleached hair. Apparently, he, like, sleeps outside and is, like, a mountain man, which is pretty dope. So
don't we all, though, at the end of the day?
I don't, but, well. I mean, look, this week there's, you know, just over 120 golfers, so we might as well just list off the names, and then we can take credit in case they do.
I think we'll get started here. I'll sprinkle in some random ones throughout the podcast. We're going to start with Barnrat. I think that we could. Where else would you rather start than with
off of Barnrat? Braden Thornberry.
There we go.
Maybe
118 left.
Yeah, maybe on FanShare they'll have to tag every single one of these golfers if we name them all.
I'm so sorry. Don't actually tag Barnrat, please. I don't want to be tied to that. But this is the Arnold Palmer Invitational. As Brandon mentioned, it is a tune-up for the players, which is just around the corner. And it's a pretty long course here at Bay Hill. It is 7,419 yards and a par 72. There are roughly 120 golfers in the field. Again, 118 left to mention. The cut occurs after the first two rounds. So traditional cut rules, a higher percentage of the golfers will make the cut this weekend, but still making the cut will be a pretty large priority for your DFS lineups. And Brandon, if we want to identify golfers who will make the cut and finish well, which stats should we focus on here at Bay Hill?
Well, I mean, hopefully these stats lead us to some good finishes, but
we've never recommended somebody's missed the cut ever. I'm just going to go revisionist history here because why not?
The big one, if this is your first podcast, maybe you don't know, but if this is not, then you should already know that strokes gained approach. It's always going to be near the top of the list because it's just sort of the most shots you take are just approach shots from various lengths. That's the case again for me this week. It's proved more valuable to strokes gained tee to green than, off the tee and around the green combined over the past 5 years at this course, based on the data that I pulled from fantasynational.com. It's a long par 72, so that requires good performance on the par fives. I've heard par three scoring, which I always am a little bit, eerie to sort of factor in because that sort of ties into approach play as well, and par three scoring can be pretty fluky. I'm instead looking at the par fives. The past five winners all churned out at least, 2.3 strokes gained on the par fives. It's just sort of correlated well with success here. Proximity, specifically from 200 plus yards, the long approach shots sort of account for a disparate number of approach shots here. That range has not always panned out and led to a lot of success, but it did last year and the year before. Rory McIlroy led that stat in 2017. He finished fourth. In 2018, McIlroy finished second in that stat and won. Bryson DeChambeau led in proximity from 200 plus yards, finished second last year. Henrik Stenson ranked seventh and finished fourth. So, it really came through last year. And we are still on Bermuda greens, which are overseeded with ryegrass. That means that we can dig into Bermuda splits, and actually, we always have to be sort of wary about just looking at strokes gained putting and applying that. But if you can find putting splits on Bermuda, whether that's fantasynational.com or futureoffantasy.com, I do recommend it. I am using that this week. So to recap my key stats list for Bay Hill: strokes gained approach, strokes gained on par fives, proximity, specifically from 200 plus yards, birdie or better rate, and putting on Bermuda.
And I'm taking a slightly different route to try to account for those par fives and factoring in driving distance, because with my process, that did pop up as being a fairly significant indicator of who would finish well, because last year in 2018, the median ranking in driving distance for the full season on the PGA Tour of the top 20 golfers was 50th. The median ranking in driving accuracy, it was 105th. And the median ranking in good drive rate was 118th. So definitely more of a distance-heavy course than anything that will help account for the par fives. And, of course, approach on my list, as well as strokes gained around the green for this weekend. Before we take a look at which golfers have performed well at Bay Hill in the past, I want to let you know that for all of you NBA DFS players, we got a brand new podcast on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed just for you. It is the Daily ISO with Tom Vecchio. It'll go up every weekday morning, previewing that night's slate with a position-by-position breakdown. To check it out and make sure you get each episode right as it's posted, subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcast. That is the Daily ISO with Tom Vecchio on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Let's dig in now to course history here at Bay Hill. They've been coming here for a long, long time. So a lot of golfers have performed well here, and a lot of the big names have won in the past, including the defending champion Rory McIlroy. Brandon, $12,200. Let's start things off here with Rory. Figure out how we're handling him this weekend.
Yeah, Rory, the odds-on favorite, according to Betfair, at 7-1. He's priced at $12,200 on FanDuel. He's got great form at Bay Hill, not just the win last year, but the fourth place finish before that, the 27th before that, and the 11th in 2015. So four straight years of good success. You're not really, even at his price, I mean, if he finishes 27th, you can't really complain too much. He's also coming in with super hot recent form. He was second at the WGC Mexico, fourth at the Genesis, fifth at the Farmers, third at the Tournament of Champions. He's gained strokes with his approach play in seven straight events. He's on Bermuda greens this week, which is his best putting surface, according to Fantasy National. I never, ever really consider Rory a cash game play. Usually, if Dustin Johnson or Justin Thomas are in the field, I kind of put them in that tier, but Rory's not on that level for me. He's priced as such. He's golfing, just as good as those guys can. Obviously, he's on a track that suits him. I do think that he's worth the $12,200. I don't think that's really a hot take. So, Jim, it's a loaded field, a lot of studs. Any thoughts on Rory relative to the other top guys?
Yeah, I agree. In cash games, he is a really good play for this week at 12-2, because I think, A, there's value to allow me to afford him, and B, I think that how well he's golfing, he has everything you want. Like, he has a course history, he has current form, he has stats. So I think for cash games, I am hashtag Team Rory this weekend. But for tournaments, we always talk about how when a golfer is going to be super popular, we want to be wary of them. And I think that the reason that last week I still used Justin Thomas, even though he had the dead arm or whatever it was because I didn't see a lot of alternatives in his tier from a play perspective. But this week we have Justin Rose. And I think that Justin Rose is equal to, I don't want to say better than Rory, but I think he's at least equal to Rory, even though he's not quite playing as well right now, despite the win at the Farmers. So I think for tournaments, I would rather go with Justin Rose under the assumption that he will have a little bit less intrigue around him than Rory does as the past champ or the most recent champion. So tournaments, Rory, I think, or sorry, for cash games, Rory, I think for tournaments, probably leaning more towards Justin Rose in that top end.
Yeah, I mean, I made the note in my write-up, just my overall primer, on numberfire.com that I really think the top 11 in salary are all, they made my initial shortlist, and that makes it really difficult to sit back and, I mean, and really say, no, Rory is the much better player than Justin Rose. It just, you can't really do that. And so for me, I know this is not maybe the most helpful bit of advice, but really I wait until Wednesday night or Thursday morning, depending on when tee times are, in events like this where I like a lot of the golfers who are priced similarly. And I just sort of let ownership dictate my decision-making. So I'm good. I have some stronger convictions on certain golfers at the top, but I mean, you know, you play this thing 10 times. I could see Rory being the better play 5 times and Rose being better 5 times as well.
Right. And if ownership will skew more towards Rory, then you want to have more Justin Rose. So let's talk here about another guy who I also would not generally consider a cash game play. That is Jason Day. And even with Tiger Woods withdrawing, we got a lot of former Bay Hill winners in the field. And one of them is Jason Day at 11,700. That win came back in 2016 for Day. Shot a 66 and a 65 the first two rounds, and essentially was able to coast to victory from there on out. And if you include that win, Day has 4 straight top 25 finishes at this event. He was also 25th back in 2010. He's also riding some good current form. He's on a streak of 7 straight top 20 finishes. He has been top 5 each of his past 2 events. So, Brandon, Day is a little bit of a discount between from Rory and Justin Rose. He is $11,700. Day is not a guy I use all that often. I think I tend to be underweight on him relative to the field almost every time he's in the field. Where do you sit with Day this week at 11-7?
I love Jason Day. Okay. Again, it's really difficult for me to sit here and say that I could guarantee that he's the better play to someone like Ricky Fowler, who's $200 cheaper. I like Ricky again. I mean, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I like a lot of these golfers near the top. I think it's very easy to talk yourself into any of them. But for Day specifically, what he does that other top tier golfers don't necessarily do, I mean, he's not the best ball striker among the elite guys. He's still passable. He has a very nice 69th in strokes gained approach over the past 100 rounds among golfers in this field. It's actually below sort of the middle point here, you know, in the field. But he putts well pretty much on any surface, but he's very good on Bermuda. He can gain strokes around the green, and he always still scores well on the par fives, and in part because he's so good around the green and with the flat stick. But I like Jason Day. I kind of have a feeling about Jason Day this week, and sometimes in golf it's not just how the stats line up. So I like Day. I probably would rank him near the top of that 11 man list.
Okay, so Brooks Koepka is $11,400, and given what Koepka did last week, I think we can assume Koepka will be fairly popular. Koepka, given ownership, or Jason Day?
So hard to say on a Tuesday morning, but Jason Day by a hair for now.
Okay. I would go Koepka there, even with the ownership. Just I think that he is really good. I mean, Jason Day is too. But like, I'm not trying to poop on Jason Day. But I'd go Koepka over Day, even under the assumption of ownership. So I think I'm higher on Koepka than you and lower on Day is the read that I have.
Well, frankly, if I was really ranking them, Koepka would probably end up still being in my top 3.
Okay,
sure. That much higher on Day overall.
Okay, so we're similar on Koepka. You're just higher on Day. I think that makes sense. Yeah. Let's close up the course history discussion by talking about two golfers, Brandon, who I adore, of course, and two golfers who are both $9,100 in a field where we do need to find some guys who are in that tier. One of them is Keegan Bradley. Way back in the day, Bay Hill was kind of like his place and hasn't been too bad since then either. Keegan has been interesting recently. So what is he at Keegan Bradley here at Bay Hill at $9,100?
Yeah, if we go way back, usually I do like 5 years, which starts with a second place finish for Keegan. But if we go back 6 years, he was third here at Bay Hill. So his finishes 3rd, 2nd, 49th, 36th, 34th, 26th. So, I mean, his best days, his best finishes came, you know, 5 and 6 years ago. But that's at 9,100, top 40s is going to get you some you know, finishing points on FanDuel. You know, he's not, and it's a little bit weird because he's not historically a plus putter on Bermuda. And in fact, it's his worst of the three, you know, primary putting surfaces that he'll play on. But he actually leads the field in approach over the past 100 rounds, which is kind of the sample size that I'm settling in on as the sort of the best for, you know, weighing recent but also long-term form. So, I mean, we know that his irons, his general approach play can be there. But the problem with him is that he's always risky. He can tank with the putter. Again, he's not historically good on Bermuda. So it's a little bit of a, I guess, I don't know. I can see it both ways. He's played well here, even though it's not his best putting surface. So I like him at his price, but we do have to factor in the blowout potential. So where are you with your boy Keegan Bradley this week?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that Keegan has this blowout potential, but we haven't seen that in a long time, honestly. Like, he's made, I think, 18 straight cuts. I'm talking about him on the FanDuel Hurry Up today, and like, I was looking at his recent events, and like, I think he's made 18 straight cuts. So this perception around Keegan that he is a blowout golfer is accurate, and I want to note that. But I think we've seen a long enough sample where he has been less volatile, where I'm starting to like consider him to be a cash game play in the right environments. And I think given what he's done at Bay Hill, given how good his approach play is, given where he's finished recently, I think he actually is a cash game-esque play for me this weekend. So Keegan, he's 91, and I think that at that salary, I can accept the fact that maybe he blows up, and it has been a long time since we've seen that for Keegan, but I'm willing to put trust in the recent numbers and still use him. So I think Keegan's a cash game play. I think that he will be a fringe core play to a core play this weekend for me in tournaments too. So I like Keegan quite a bit. What about for you?
Yeah. I mean, I know I mentioned the blowout potential. It's more, you know, the difference between potentially like a 60th or just a frustrating week. It doesn't really help you separate. But I mean, you mentioned the missed cuts. You know, the official World Golf Rankings page is a pretty good place to go just to look at, you know, a snapshot table. But since the start of 2018, he's played 31 events, missed two cuts. If you go back, another 27, he missed six cuts out of those 27. So like, out of like 60 events, he's missed eight cuts, which is not what you'd expect from the tilt that surrounds the name Keegan Bradley.
Right.
It's just more he may not sort of come through with a top flight finish here, which is, again, in a field where it's 120 golfers, so you're probably going to have to hit on the right core. There's upside, but there's also maybe some you know, disappointment baked in because of his putting.
Sure. I think that makes sense. And Keegan, we know the winless streak he had before last year. So the upside for a win is lower than other guys. But I do think that there's a little bit more safety here than the general perception may be of Keegan. Safety, probably not something I would tout for Luke List because, you know, we talked him up as a course horse a couple weeks ago. He finished 15th in that event. So, you know, let's talk about him here as well, because Bay Hill is in another place where Luke List has done well. He's been to Bay Hill twice now, and he has done well both times. First one was in 2017. He was under par in three of four rounds, finished 17th there, followed that up last year by shooting 68 or better twice and finished seventh. And for me personally, I am factoring in distance, and Brandon is in a similar way by looking at par five scoring. List has distance for sure. Brandon, Luke List, also $9,100. Are you willing to take the dive on him at this reduced salary?
We'll probably hear a lot about like the Keith Mitchell panned out this past week, so Luke List can do it too. The thing with List for me is that the reason I can go back to him at 9,100 is because he's 9,100 and not, you know, 10, what was he, 10-2, I think he was.
I believe so, yeah.
That's a big difference, especially in a field like this. So, I mean, if you want to sort of load up on the bombers, you know, play your Brooks at the top, you know, I think you can go that route and just maybe pair like a correlation lineup in case the greens play a certain way to sort of benefit. I mean, Brooks is very good on Bermuda, so it's not quite the same. But I think that we can go back to List because he's so cheap and because he's just such a good ball striker. and can convert on the par fives, you know, if he just is even decent on the
greens. I think the salary discussion is accurate, because when he got that 15th place finish, I didn't use him at all that week because he was above $10,000. And the volatility that is still there in Luke List's game is harder for me to accept when he's 10-2 than when he's 10-1 or when he's 9-1, because everyone at 9-1 is going to be volatile in some way. So I think that with List's salary being down this week, I am in on him for sure. I like the most recent finishes at this event. It doesn't, I don't care as much about that, but it certainly doesn't hurt. So Luke List, $9,100, him or Keegan, Brandon?
Keegan for me, straight up.
I would go the same, especially in cash games, Keegan, but I think I'd favor Keegan by a hair in tournaments as well. Let's take a look at golfers who are playing really well right now. Starting off with Ricky Fowler, Brandon, and Ricky Fowler got that win not too long ago. Comes back next week, last weekend, almost wins again. Ricky Fowler, maybe he just had to like break the ice and hoist a trophy again, because it seems like this guy is just in a zone right now.
Yeah, I mean, the it feels like Ricky's on the verge. You know, it feels like once he gets one, he's just gonna do it. It feels like it's been that way for a long time with Ricky, but I mean, we've haven't really seen that. I mean, he came up short last week, tied for second, but that was a nice bounce back after 36th at the WGC Mexico. And of course, as you alluded to, he won the Waste Management. He's been racking up positive strokes on the greens the past three events. So, I mean, I don't love that. And if you actually, I mean, if you watch the Honda, he was really saving himself from quite a ways. He made a putt off the green, you know, just generally sort of unsustainable putting production around the green production. But I mean, he's still just an elite overall player. He has a pair of top 14s at Bay Hill the past two seasons. You know, spoiler alert, I like Ricky this week. It's very easy to make the case for him compared to the other guys, you know, putting him in that same tier. I'm not totally sure that he's the play for me this week. I think that Ricky always ends up being a little bit too popular after the second place finish, you know, after being a bit boosted by some, you know, some bailouts. I think that this might be a week where I'm going to have to cross off some of these top guys from my list. So I think that Ricky might be one of them, even though he's so hot right now. So where are you with Ricky this week compared to the rest?
Yeah, it's really hard for me. And this is going to be like a common thing. I just think that Brooks Koepka's way underpriced at 11-4. And when I look at him being 11-4 and Ricky being 11-5, it's so hard for me to justify going with Ricky over Brooks. Like, I could, in theory, just use both, but I really like Justin Rose. As mentioned, I think McIlroy is still a good play, despite the fact he will likely be very popular. So when I look at McIlroy, Rose, Koepka, I think I put all of them ahead of Ricky. Maybe I put Ricky fourth on that list, but I think that Bryson DeChambeau is in that discussion. I think that Tommy Fleetwood at 10-6, given the different type of roster construction he gets you, is also intriguing. Francesco Molinari was pretty good at the WGC Mexico. So I think I like Ricky this week, and I love what he has done recently, but I don't think it's enough for me to say I will use him, even potentially not at all this weekend, just because I think that there are so many good options right in his pricing tier.
Yeah, I mean, just at the end of the day, it's just going to be really difficult to filter through. But I keep going back to Brooks as well. I was on him last week. We were both on him. I said that I put Jason Day a little bit ahead of him, but I think that, you know, if I'm ranking just those three, you know, Day at 11-7, Fowler at 11-5, and Koepka at 11-4, I'm putting Ricky third.
I'd probably put him ahead of Jason Day personally.
I know, because you hate Jason Day.
Right. I clearly hate this guy.
You hate the guy.
Yeah. I mean, just I wake up every day ruining the fact that he's so good at golf, and I'm not. But I think even with Fowler being second behind Koepka, I have him a full tier behind Koepka. And that's going to result in me being very heavy on Brooks. And if I don't go with Koepka, I might just be dropping down to the Molinaris, to the Fleetwoods, maybe even like I mean, Hideki's 11,000, and he's also been really good recently. So I think if I don't go Brooks in that tier, I might just avoid that tier entirely. So I like Ricky. It's hard not to use him, but, you know, just I think that's where I'll be this week.
So you do think you'll get to Fleetwood and maybe Molinari?
Yeah, I think I could see myself doing that just because I could see the most common build this weekend being McIlroy or Rose plus one guy from that second tier. And I would guess that's going to let guys like Fleetwood and Molinari be under-owned. I don't always like the mid 9,000 range, but I really do this week. And using those guys allows me to live in that range a bit more. So I think I will see myself going there. What about for you?
If I'm going, so I like Hideki quite a bit. Mm-hmm. At 11,000, but if I'm going
Phil's there too, I should mention.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Is if I'm looking at, you know, there's four or five names between 11,500 and 11,000, or 10,500 and 11,000. Phil is the one who stands out to me most. So mm-hmm. It's just interesting that you said Molinari and Fleetwood. Who again? I mean, I definitely see the case for this week, but Phil is the guy for me of those four or five.
Yeah, Mickelson's like day for me where I just am constantly underweight and it burns me really badly sometimes. Like, I mean, real bad. But
yeah, if you want to play like that Bermuda angle, those two, you know, among the studs really pop.
For sure.
Is the best putters on Bermuda.
So one thing I mentioned there is that I do like the mid 9,000 range. So let's talk about that range here for our next three golfers in the current form section, starting with Michael Thompson. He is very interesting because he's been really good recently. He finished 16th at the Honda Classic, and that's good. But if you go back to the Desert Classic over the past five events, that's actually Thompson's worst finish in this time. In that span, he has three top 10 finishes. The best was a seventh at the Genesis. Last week, Thompson did gain 8.5 strokes putting per Fantasy National, and he lost 4.1 strokes in his approach, and that is a red flag, but he had gained at least three strokes on his approach each of the previous four events, so this streak has not been entirely fueled by a hot putter for Thompson, which is something we have to be skeptical of in general. So, Brandon, Michael Thompson, $9,600 in a range I like quite a bit. What are your thoughts on him for this week?
So he's not someone I'm going to talk you out of. I just don't particularly think that I'm going to chase the, you know, the what I would assume is going to be solid ownership with just how well he's played over the past, you know, month or two. We talked about him last week even.
We talked about him in current form 2 weeks ago, I think, or okay. Before or 3 weeks ago.
Was it that long ago?
Jeez. I think so. He was in the current form section not super long ago, I know.
Yeah, I remember.
May have talked to him last week in current form, actually.
Yeah, I think that was the case. But like he's not really making these finishes because of the putting. The ball striking has been there. The tee to green play mm-hmm. just been solid overall. I kind of been seeing his name too much. Sure. And his price is back down. The long term form just isn't there yet because his run's been so hot. So I always get a little bit wary about that. Whenever I have, for example, Jason Kokrak at 95, yeah. I don't really think people love Jason Kokrak enough to like worry.
We'll talk about that.
I mean, we love Jason. We're like the number one.
He got a little bit of love last week and it made me a little bit skittish in retrospect of using him as heavily as I did.
Really?
Yeah, he was 22% last
22,
week.
Yeah, I just pulled it up too. Huh.
We're going to talk about that in the Coke Rack section in current form because I've been watching him and it hadn't happened from an ownership perspective until last weekend, but it's getting me a little bit nervous. So
Thompson was 10.4, but again, he was 10,100. Yeah, I definitely talked about him last week because I remember that price.
Yeah.
He and List were just around 10% each and they were priced at, you know, 10,000 basically.
Yeah. So you didn't mention Byung-Hun An. He is $100 more than Thompson. I prefer An, and I don't know if An will carry the same ownership because his finishes recently have not been as glowing, but his stats are just stupid good.
He was more popular last week for whatever that is worth.
No. Get this nonsense out of here. That's terrible. Come on, man. Let's move on to Siwoo Kim, Brandon. We've talked about him before as being this volatile but high upside guy. And Kim has certainly flashed that of late. Siwoo Kim, $9,200. What have you seen with him recently that has kind of fueled these good finishes?
Yeah, solid finishes the past month or so. 29th at the Farmers, did miss the cut at the Waste Management. Fourth at Pebble Beach, third at the Genesis. And that's kind of peak Siwoo Kim. He gets pretty, I don't know if he gets streaky, but he can, you know, within one tournament, he can get streaky for sure. He's seventh in the field in total strokes gained over the past 24 rounds. So that does account for putting. So there's some rub here. He's 52nd among the field, again, about 123 golfers in ball striking, which is not bad for his price of 9,200. He's sixth around the green and 19th in putting in that split. So, you know, ideally we'd see better ball striking, but it's still not awful. If you know, you can really convert around and on the greens. He's picked up 4.4 strokes putting at Pebble Beach. The caveat there is that we don't have all four rounds of data at Pebble Beach because it's a three-course rotation. 7.2 at the Genesis, which is, you know, whenever he had his top five finishes. But I think overall, if you take a step back, that the price is fair for Siwoo Kim at 9,200. His upside is very much evident. You know, even if he's sort of neutral with the putting, he could push through, make a cut, you know, push for like a top 25. So any read on Kim for you this week?
Yeah, I think that Kim is this is true for volatile golfers in general, but someone I don't want to use now they're popular. So headed over to Fanshare to check out the tags on Kim, and he has just won so far. It's Tuesday morning, so that will go up, but like, it's not as if he's some early week favorite, despite the fact he has had these really good finishes. And, you know, Luke Liss is down there. Keegan Bradley is down there. And they're all in the same salary tier. Jason Kokrak is getting a little bit of love. And we'll talk about him in a second. And he's also in that same tier. But I think Siwoo Kim will never be a part of my core because he has so much bad potential, but I think he makes a lot of sense to get some exposure to because of the upside that you discussed. And like, yeah, it's been fueled by putting, but like he's generally not a terrible putter. So like, I think that is not totally fluky. So Siwoo Kim, 92, I am not opposed to using him. I just question if I'll be in this range. I think I'll be in this range quite a bit. So I'd bet that I'll wind up using him. But I would still rank him behind both Keegan and Luke List.
So Siwoo Kim, Keegan Bradley, and Luke List are all about equally bad on Bermuda. It's not good. They lose about, you know, 0.25 strokes per round on Bermuda, and they each have at least 113 rounds. And all this again comes from fantasynational.com. Bradley, though, has the much better ball striking than Kim. List has much better ball striking than Kim over the past 100 rounds. So I think if I'm staring down these three, and with Bradley and List both being $100 cheaper, I will never run into the situation where I will actually roster Siwoo this week. That could blow up for me. I'm fully aware of that, but I'm willing to embrace the Siwoo fade.
I think for me,
that even counts for a fade.
Yeah, I think for me, like and Siwoo was never super popular in DFS. I was looking at like historic ownership, and like he's not ever prohibitively popular, which makes sense because like again, he is super volatile. But I think if I'm rating them from an exposure perspective, Keegan is the core play, Luke List is the fringe core play, and Siwoo Kim for me would be the sprinkle play if I had to, you know, give titles to how I feel about them for tournaments. Let's talk here about Jason Kokrak, kind of the elephant in the room, because for once, I'm not talking about Jason Kokrak in the player picks, but of course, it would not be a Heat Check podcast without some discussion around Jason Kokrak, because his current form is really good here. He's coming off a ninth place finish at the Honda Classic. That gives him 14 straight made cuts, and interestingly, that was Kokrak's first top 10 in that time. He had a bunch of top 20s, but he hadn't cracked the top 10 yet, so it was actually a flash of additional upside on a really tough course. And this is a decently tough course, too. The one issue is that Kokrak was on 22% of all FanDuel rosters there, meaning people are starting to catch on to how good he has been. So, Brandon, Kokrak, just one top 10 in this streak where he's made 14 straight cuts, but the ownership is starting to creep up. Are we about to the point where we have to jump off the Jason Kokrak bandwagon before he flops at high ownership?
I mean, that's how I generally play.
I don't. So it makes me very uneasy.
I mean, frankly, you're not. We have other options in that mid range. I think there are a lot of guys we can make the case for. Of course, I mean, in a combined short and long form sort of ranking, I have Kokrak just fifth in the key stats I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit of a. I mean, he's basically a neutral putter on Bermuda, a little bit negative, but
neutral's better than most of the guys I like, so we're good there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's a better. You know, the stats say that he's a better Bermuda putter than the three guys we just talked about, Kim, Bradley, and List. He's second over the past 100 rounds in proximity from that 200-plus yard distance. I think there's a very easy case to make for Kokrak. But again, he's not foolproof by any means.
Sure.
So if we want to bounce off, we can. I think we can go back to him this week, though, especially in like cashier formats. But yeah. Maybe in your bigger tournaments, maybe that's when you jump off.
Yeah, I think Kokrak to me would be a lock in cash for this week because the stats are so good and because he does have course knowledge. The current form is elite. So, like, if I'm prioritizing one guy in this mid 9,000 range for cash, it's going to be Jason Kokrak. But I think for tournaments, you got guys like Haotong Lee is right there. Tyrrell Hatton is $9,200. You do have List and Bradley and Kim all within that same range too. So you have alternatives, and those are the situations in which I feel better about fading a guy I like. If I have good alternatives, I'm more okay with it. And there are alternatives for this week for Jason Kokrak. So I don't know if I can get myself to go with a full fade. I think I still want to get some Kokrak exposure. Like, I'll put my cash game lineup into a tournament and I'll have Kokrak there. But I think we're almost to the point where he is going to be a little bit too popular given the fact that there are alternatives in this salary tier. Before we dig into what the bookmakers are saying this week, I wanted to let you know about FanDuel's Hot Streak Contest. Jason Kokrak clearly investing in that. That is running through March 11th. Each day, there is one featured streak-eligible contest that you can play with tons of cash prizes up for grabs. If you have at least one lineup finish in the top 50% of users, then your streak continues. Your longest streak until March 11th will be rewarded. And to top it off, whoever achieves the longest streak could win $25,000 in cash. So head over to FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel app and get started with FanDuel's Hot Streak Contest. Again, that goes through March 11th. Let's take a look at what Vegas and the bookmakers are saying about the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Rory McIlroy is the definitive favorite on Betfair, sitting at 7-1 right now. Then you get a little blob here with Justin Rose at 10-1. Brooks Koepka is 11-1. And Ricky Fowler is 12-1. Jason Day rounds up the top tier at 14-1. Then you slip down to Bryson DeChambeau. He is 18-1. Mark Leishman is 25-1. Leishman, a former winner here as well. Hideki Matsuyama rounds up the top group at 28-1 before we get Phil, Francesco, and Fleetwood all between 33 and 35. Brandon, let's talk here about Rory McIlroy. With him being the defending champion here, the heavy favorite, the highest salary golfer, which you have seen is a good indicator of ownership. Is it fair to assume that Rory is going to be the most popular guy in this upper tier of salaries?
I would have to think, especially when you bump out Tiger Woods, who was priced at $11,800. You knock him out. I think anybody who maybe built a really early lineup, which, I mean, probably not a whole lot of people, they could find the money to get up to Rory. I guess the only way that he wouldn't be, I think, is that if people just prefer Justin Rose straight up. And as of right now, on FanShare, they're tied. It's dead even. But I would think that Rory might pull away come Thursday. I think that he's the better play to Rose straight up. But I would expect ultimately that Rory is popular enough where I just – kind of fade him and hope for the best, but it could definitely blow up with how good he's looked.
Right. And that is the concern, because we always talk about which golfers in this field can just dust everybody, and Rory definitely fits that mold for this week. Yeah. So fading him is risky for sure. But I think given the tea leaves I'm reading as far as ownership goes, even though the fan share tags are close now, I agree with you, they'll probably lengthen that a bit before we get to Thursday morning. So I think for me, I'm standing pretty firm on Rose over McIlroy in tournaments, given what I would expect would be a discrepancy in ownership between the two guys. And I think, I don't like Rose more than McIlroy straight up, but it's very, very close to me. And I think that makes me feel good about Rose. Let's assume Rory does pull away in tags. Then would you go Rose over McIlroy in tournaments?
I'd probably just bump down.
And okay, sure.
I kind of highlighted, five of the, pretty much, I guess, technically, the only reason I didn't highlight Hideki is because I didn't want to play or, recommend six golfers in a row in salary. That doesn't necessarily help too many people. But Day Fowler, Koepka, Bryson, Hideki, Phil, I like a lot. So I just probably try to take the savings and avoid the two top guys and hope that, Rory and Rose do prove to be the chalk this week.
So liking Hideki and Phil, does that mean you're probably going to be totally off of Francesco and Fleetwood this weekend?
I don't play like 150 golf lineups, so I have to pick and choose. I mean, even between those six names I just rattled off, I'm probably going to have to filter out somebody, maybe even two golfers. It could just be Hideki, which he kind of seems the least terrifying because he's the least likely of the six to me to sort of really convert on the greens and pull away. So even though his irons have been so good, he can just do everything. I'd probably avoid Hideki, but to answer your question, I do think that I would probably not end up with any Fleetwood or Molinari.
Okay. Yeah. I think I probably will go there because I'm not as into Phil. So if I do decide to go with a more balanced approach, I think that those guys would fit that pretty easily. What movement have you seen since things opened yesterday on Betfair?
I think we have to have a side bet between Phil and like Molinari or something.
All right. I'll take that.
It might be one of our better bets that we've ever made on the podcast.
Yeah, these guys are too good for my taste, so I don't know if I can actually do this, but I'll take Francesco. That's fine.
All right. So movement I've seen since yesterday on Betfair. A lot of sort of movement. I think some reshuffling, with the Tiger Woods withdrawal. These guys have all seen their odds lengthen or, worsen in terms of their probability to win based on the, conversion. From odds to probability. Bryson actually was 16-1. He's now 18-1. Hideki was 25. He's now 28. Bubba Watson, Louis Westhazen, however, all the same person. And Lucas Glover. So again, Bubba, Louis, and Lucas Glover all moved from 45 to 50. Henrik Stenson dropped from 50 to 55. Brent Snedeker from 80 to 100. And then if we look at guys whose odds have improved or shortened, Jason Kokrak from 60 to 55. So that sort of backs up the Kokrak might be, he might have some backers.
Yeah.
Luke Wist, 80 to 70. Kevin Kisner, 100 to 80. Patrick Rogers and Taylor Gooch, who's turning into my boy pretty quickly, 125 to 100.
I think that is justifiable, Taylor Gooch. He was running pretty hot last week, finished 20th there, so I get that for sure. I want to talk about that 10,000 range, cheaper than Molinari and Fleetwood. We haven't talked about any of Uistazen, Poulter, Lucas Glover in this podcast. Are you going to be in that tier at all? Like, is it worth discussing them, or do you think that it's worth getting some exposure to those guys?
Oh, yeah, I think it's worth discussing them for sure. I mean, this is another week, and this is really shaping up to be like a great just stretch of PGA DFS because you can say, I want to play Rory and I want to play, Brooks or Day or whoever it is, and really take chances on some punt plays like I mean, we saw Vijay Singh hanging around last week. You know, that you can sort of make the punt plays. There's not a whole lot in like the actual like 7,000 range that I would consider, but like in your low eights, you know, your Danny Willett's, I think that we're going to name probably a few. I don't want to get ahead of myself or anything like that, but
yeah,
you can really go top heavy, bottom heavy, and completely overlook that mid range. Or you can try, you know, and I do this every now and again, I build some lineups where it's, well, what if, you know, some of the top guys don't really come through and it's more of a, it proves to be more of a tough event. And then you can get, you know, three or four Leishman, Molinari, mm-hmm. you know, Poulter level guys. So I think there's merit to the to these options. Does anybody stand out to you?
Yeah, I like Glover. I mean, again, shocker, because yeah. I always love Lucas Glover, but he's 30th in distance the past 36 rounds per Fantasy National, 15th in approach, 30th around the green. He finished 7th here in 2017. Last two finishes in the PGA Tour are 7th and 4th. And I think given the most popular roster construction this week, he's probably not going to get too much love, despite the fact that like his fan share tags will be high because he's in that tier. But I don't think that will lead to a lot of people using him, just because I don't think they'll be in that tier very often. So I'm not going to – like, I do like the Rose Koepka start to a lineup, but I'm also very much not opposed to rolling out a more balanced lineup where I do get a Fleetwood, I do get a Glover, I do get a Ben On, guys in that middle tier who I wouldn't normally be able to use with a more top-heavy roster. So I think for me this week, I am going to ensure I get some balanced lineups in there because I really like what it gets me for this week. So I think – normally, you're the one who is a bigger advocate of a balanced lineup, but for this week, given the specific golfers we have, I am very much more into it than I usually am.
Yeah, I mean, I love like bad golfers who can't putt, like great ball strikers who can't putt, and those guys are usually cheap. But they're cheap for a reason, and it's because they're not safe. And if you know you have one or two guys miss a cut, you really, you know, hamstring your ability to contend for, you know, a huge score. So the balanced approach sort of makes sense from that philosophy of, you know, you get six, you know, tier three golfers, you know, in this sense, I'm saying like tier threes, you know, your Fleetwoods and your Molinaris relative to the top of this field. You get all six of them to push through. Now the one variable here is that this is a smaller field. It's 120 golfers. So you can take more chances on some punt plays, but you all like I always see it both ways where, you know, people would be more inclined to do that. So if you, by going a balanced, and I mean there are a lot of options. You like Glover, you know, we mentioned Fleetwood, Molinari, Phil, I like Poulter, I like Rafa Cabrera Bello. There's definitely a way to build a balanced lineup. So I see the merit for both.
All I heard was ball strikers who can't putt, and the Burgoon pontoon is here this weekend, 74 and 300 to one. So, hey, if Keith Mitchell can win, man, Burgoon pontoon may be back in action. We're patching it up, getting it ready for the water again. You know, not so, rolling hey, out.
16th on par fives over the past 100 rounds.
Don't do this. 20th
in proximity from 200 plus yards, 55th in approach, 33rd in opportunities gained.
Hey, he did make a cut last week for the first time in like a year. So
I don't know, Jim.
Trending up.
I don't know. I mean, you plug up in your, hey, Hank Lebiota, by the way,
hey, last week. That's true.
So, I mean, you get one Burgoon to, and I mean, we never really talk about like the 7,000 range because it's,
they're bad usually.
I mean, it's scary to, you know, fill out your lineups. I can definitely see the case for it, and I do go this route every now and again. But you get one guy in that range, you open up a lot. So I don't know, Jim. Maybe I will play some Burgoon or Anders Albertsen. Who, he's played like four rounds.
Hey, four rounds counts. We'll do that. All right. Speaking of low salary golfers, maybe not quite that low. Which low salary golfers have odds that stand out to you on Betfair?
Yeah, so we have Keegan Bradley at 9,100. He is 50-1. He's very much sort of the poster boy this week for that. Although Siwoo Kim is 60-1 at 9,200. Hao Tong Lee, Tyrrell Hatton, and Cameron Champ are all 66. Luke List is 70-1. Adam Hadwin, Charles Schwartzel, Kevin Kisner, Shane Lowry, and last week's winner, Keith Mitchell, are all 80-1. Really from there, it's kind of a, you know, hit or miss in like the super punt play range. But I guess I can, I mean, like, I don't know if Sung J M at 100-1 is really worth mentioning. I like him this week, but he's not necessarily someone I'm looking at because of his win odds. Although I guess Danny Willett is 125-1 at 8,100.
So you mentioned Cam Champ. I am looking at distance this week, and he can do that for sure. Any interest in him? Shane Lowry's kind of in a similar mold where they're not great with their approach play, but they can launch. Any interest in those guys at all? Or are they just kind of, you know, in that, not quite on the same level as Keegan and List in that same salary tier?
Yeah, and then there's Sung J M and Taylor Gooch.
The list is just too big of guys you like there.
Yeah, I mean, the Champ in just 20 rounds has very good splits on Bermuda, but I mean, I could see the case for it again, but I would go with Keegan and List over Cam Champ.
And as you know, I would do the same because I love those guys. Weather for this weekend doesn't seem like it'll be much of a factor. The only times the winds get above 10 miles per hour are Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning, and even then, they'll still be below 15 miles per hour. So, looks like a pretty calm weekend down in Florida. So, looks like we can proceed as usual and talk about our player picks for the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Starting off in the high range, Brandon, which golfers are you targeting with lofty salaries this weekend?
So, I'm going to pivot. I was going to say Jason Day first, but I do think that I sort of – we talked about Jason Day already for course history. I'm going to talk instead about Bryson.
Alrighty.
At 11,200, I think he's very I wouldn't say he's underpriced, but he's nice to have that sort of discount from the other top-tier golfers at 18-1. Last time we saw him was not good, so that I think that's going to – I mean, I think people don't like Bryson as well, and that probably always is going to help with his ownership. I like him a lot as a golfer, just the way that he approaches things.
I thought you're projecting because of your hate on his hat game.
No, I respect the hat game. If you own your hat game, you know, that's what matters, and he owns it. But I mean, he's very methodical, and I think that people just, I mean, I can talk about this at a later time, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, his odds have slipped from 16-1 to 18-1, despite that withdrawal from Tiger Woods. He's eighth in approach, third in strokes gained on par fives, second in proximity from 200 plus yards over the past 100 rounds on tour. He's best when putting on Bermuda. He grades out very safe, very solid, with obvious upside. So I would not, you know, fault lineups that actually start with Bryson at the top.
Mm-hmm. And the thing I like about Bryson is that I've grown more fond of targeting consistent golfers who are coming off of bad events. And Bryson fits that mold. He was 56 in Mexico. So he fits that mold for sure. I think I probably won't use him, but I think that he does make sense for sure. My first high-priced guy, let's talk about Justin Rose. I haven't really discussed why I like him as much as I do. I'm really hoping that the shiny objects around him in McIlroy and Koepka and Day and Fowler and all these guys can take away a little bit of ownership from Rose. I know he'll be popular, but like, you know, maybe his ownership will be lower than it should be here. Rose has been a bit shakier recently. He had a miscut at the Saudi International. That was his most recent event. He was also just 34th at the Desert Classic, but between there, Rose did win the Farmers Insurance Open. That is one of seven top fives he has had in his past 11 events. Rose ranks 10th or better in driving distance, in approach, and in strokes gained around the green over the past 36 rounds per Fantasy National. So I am fully in on him here at $12,100. Brandon, you mentioned, I think, that you have McIlroy above Rose. Are you going to get any Rose exposure despite that this weekend?
Probably not. I can't play everyone.
Sure.
And if I'm going to spend up on the 12,000 guys, I'm just going to go with Rory because he's just been so good. I think it really comes down to that. If Justin Rose runs away with this one, I will just deal with it. I like Justin Rose enough to sort of, find some merit there. You mentioned the missed cut at the Saudi. I think he kind of phoned that one in, just took the check, but
yeah,
don't quote me on that.
I'd take a check too. Don't blame him. Who else do you like in this high pricing tier?
So I'm going to talk about Phil at 10,900. I feel like it's best. I always just enjoy hearing options and then making my own choices. So I'm going to throw out Phil rather than, keep hitting on some of the guys we already talked about. He's 19th in approach over the past 100 rounds, according to Fantasy National. He excels on Bermuda greens. That's kind of what he does best. And Pat Mayo took it a bit further and actually looked at, Bermuda splits on fast greens, which is what we have here. Phil grades out well there. Putting is always something that's hard to predict week to week, but I do think that there's merit this week for this particular track to look deep into the putting splits on fast Bermuda greens. Phil, obviously the recent win, Pebble Beach, a pair of top 40s since that win. He's not played Bay Hill since missed cut in 2013, but had finished top 30 in three tries leading into it. I do think that he's going to go a bit overlooked. There's just so many names around him that I think he stands out as sort of a tournament play.
And with Phil, with putting, putting is unpredictable in general, but we've got a big enough sample on Phil Mickelson where I think you can say he's a good putter. That's probably.
Yeah, the proximity, the par fives, the approach has been there too, so that helps.
I'm going to talk about Brooks Koepka because I think he's just really underpriced. I think it's as simple as that. This is a loaded field, so it's hard for someone to be underpriced at 11.4, but Koepka is balling out, and it seems like he cares again, which is good. Ranks third in distance over the past 36 rounds. He is ninth in approach, and he gained 6.6 strokes on approach at the Honda Classic per Fantasy National. He has been here just three times. He has finished the weekend just once, had a withdrawal there and a missed cut, but Koepka is a different golfer now than he was back in 2017. So I think he is a tremendous option at the salary, even at what we can assume will be lofty ownership. Brandon, any takes for you on Brooks Koepka at 11.4?
Yeah, I said that before that I put Day above him a little bit. I love Bryson at $200 cheaper, but I can't really say this without sounding like pretentious, but I make win picks for Golf Digest, and I picked Brooks last week. I picked him as a fade the week before at the WGC. I'm really eyeing him up as a potential win pick again this week. So
you're the Brooks whisperer.
I wouldn't say that because he didn't win last week, but
it's close enough.
If again we play that, who can run away with the game?
Yeah,
I think it's Rory. I think it's Rose. I think it's Brooks, and maybe Bryson.
Okay. All right, so let's move down to the middle tier in salaries. Brandon, who is catching your eye once you get around 10,000 in between 9,000?
I like Rafa, RCB, Rafa Cabrera Bayo, the VLOOKUP ruiner, one of the many on PGA Tour.
We'll touch on a couple of others here in not too long.
Whether he's Rafa, whether there's a hyphen or not, it's a mess. But he's 9,900 on FanDuel. His win odds are 66-1. On Betfair. He has not played here before, and this is a tough track, so it's kind of worth noting, but he's got positive putting splits through his 52 rounds on Bermuda, according to Fantasy National. And just overall, he grades out solidly in all of the key stats I'm looking for. Not really elite in anything, although he is 25th in strokes gained on par fives over his past 100 rounds. At his price, in a potential balanced lineup, I think that he makes a lot of sense this week.
Yeah, I think he does too. I'm not going to target him because there are other guys right beneath him who I like. But I think that it does make sense to use Cabrera Bayo. The reason I'm probably not going to go there is because Byung-Hun Ahn is $9,700. And I adore him. He had a 14th place finish at Bay Hill last year, meaning he checks all three of our boxes with course knowledge, current form, and good stats. And the stats, I think, are the big thing with Ahn because he's 25th in distance, 10th in approach, and first around the green over the past 36 rounds per Fantasy National. He has made 18 of 19 cuts. He has three top tens in that span. So I love Byung-Hun Ahn. I'm hoping people are cooling on him because the finishes recently have not been as good as they had been prior to that. So I love Byung-Hun Ahn at 97. I think for a balanced approach, he is really attractive. So Brandon, what do you think about Byung-Hun Ahn at $9,700?
He was a bit popular last week at 16.5%. And really the way that I've approached this tournament was I sort of filtered my spreadsheet by whoever ranks, you know, top 50 or so in my, you know, short and long stats, you know, well enough in approach overall. And then the Bermuda splits, just to, because it's been very hard for me to differentiate all these mid-range guys. Mm-hmm. The thing that filters him out is the putting on Bermuda, but Benon's always kind of a risk in that sense. Overall, though, he's 14th in just like my, you know, short and long model. So I definitely see the case for him. Sure. I just don't know if I'm going to get there.
All right, so let's move on to your second mid-salaried golfer, Brandon. Who else is interesting you in the mid 9,000 range?
This could be dumb, but Ryan Moore at 9,400 looks really nice this week. 7th in approach, 12th in opportunities gained, 4th in overall proximity, and 37th specifically in proximity from 200 plus yards. Over the past 100 rounds. He had a 5th place finish here last year. The real issue with Moore is potential rust. He's played just 3 times since November, missing 2 cuts and finishing 28th at the Genesis, but can't imagine anybody's going to play him at 9,400 with all these other names that we've just thrown around. You know, Kokrak, you know, Michael Thompson's in their list, Keegan. So I think that he makes a lot of sense and really isn't that much of a, you know, full-on dice roll.
Sure.
Again, the real issue is just the rust.
And the good news there is that the 28th was his most recent one, so maybe the rust getting knocked off. Not the mold of player I'm using this week. Instead, I think I favor Haotong Li at the same salary at $9,400. He's coming off a 19th place finish at the WGC Mexico, which continues a really, really impressive stretch for him. Li has finished in the top 30 in 11 of his past 12 events, including 5 top 10s and 4 top 5s. He was runner-up at the Saudi International last month. He's only $9,400, and he can get some distance off the tee. So I plan on having a lot of Haotong Li this weekend. I mentioned that Jason Kokrak might be a lock in cash games, but I think if I were to go with someone else in that tier, it might be Haotong Li instead. Brandon, what are your thoughts on Haotong Li at $9,400?
I like him just as a golfer. He's sort of fun, but I don't really, I don't like the long-term form enough from Li. I mean, he's sort of still kind of got limited samples. So I think that, again, just by the very nature of trying, you know, having trouble already filtering down my player pool, I'm just going to leave out Haotong Li.
And that means I can use him in the bobble hats, and when he wins, I can claim my 90th straight victory and ride
close
off
to it.
The sunset.
Yeah, close to it. I think it's five or six. Last week was pretty close. We both went JT and Brooks, and the real reason I went JT is just a block, and I probably should have not done that.
I mean, if he's in the field, you know it'll be my bobble hats.
So yeah.
Kind of a given at some point. But we're going to round up to 14 straight victories for me and move down to the lower salary tier. Brandon, who are you looking at once we get below $9,000?
Taylor Gooch is 8,800. He's 100-1 to win. Again, he moved, you know, his odds shortened from 125 to 100, so there's some people backing him there. Sungjae Im, I will mention, still just 9,000. I think he's fine from a safety standpoint. Gooch was 20th last week at the Honda. He is 32nd in approach, 10th in proximity from 200 plus yards. Also finished 26th here last year while losing 4.6 strokes putting and almost a full stroke off the tee. So I like Gooch at 8,800. I've kind of been playing him for quite a while, and I'm going to do so again.
I had some of him last week because of you, so thank you for that. Same salary, almost, Joaquin Neiman. We haven't mentioned him yet. Any dice rolls again this week for you on him?
I mean, if you look at approach, you look at opportunities, you look at proximity, you make the case, but I just in a DFS lineup, it's really hard to play him at this point because his putting's so bad.
Yeah, when you see someone lose 4 strokes putting for one event, it's like, oh, okay, they had a bad week. But when it happens for Joaquin Neiman, it's like the 5th time in the past 6 events that it's happened. So I'm still going to have at least one lineup because I have to at this point. But yeah, the guy... Go ahead.
There's that FOMO with Neiman for me. Yeah. I mean, retroactively, I had it with Keith Mitchell. It's like, of course, this is the Keith Mitchell week after all these weeks, but eventually Neiman's going to do it. We thought maybe it was... was it last... No.
It was last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. God. He made the cut, but he's the exact same salary as Harold of Varner III, another podcast favorite, because he consistently gains strokes off the tee and hasn't been bad in his approach play recently. He's kind of run into some bad putting that's masking his play. Varner did finish third he missed the cut at the Genesis after losing 3.2 strokes putting per Fantasy National. He finished 51st last week at the Honda Classic, despite losing 2.6 strokes putting there. Not quite Neiman bad, but not great. And he was even a slightly negative putter at the Waste Management, even though he finished 10th. So a bad stretch here for Varner. But before that stretch, Varner had gained strokes putting in 10 of his previous 11 events. And if that does come back, he could be a really solid play at $8,700. I like Varner. He's got the same win odds as Neiman at 150-1. Any thoughts for you on Harold Varner III this weekend, Brandon?
I mean, podcast favorites for sure. Kind of always grades out like solidly in pretty much any stat. But the putting, again, is just an issue. And I really think that with, you know, Gooch, $100 more, and a few more names that I think we're about to talk about. I don't know who you picked here, but...
I don't look ahead. It's not worth it.
Okay. Yeah, I think that I'm probably just not going to get to Varner this week.
Alrighty. So let's move to your second lower salaried golfer, Brandon. Who else are you looking at here below $9,000?
Nate Lashley at $8,500. He is 200-1 to win, which is not ideal. But the reason he popped for me is he's 49th in approach over the past 100 rounds, 30th in strokes gained on par fives, 6th in proximity from 200 plus yards over his, I guess, 71 measured rounds, according to Fantasy National. He's not played here before, but did finish 8th at the Puerto Rico Open when we were all looking at the WGC. So I think he sets up well at 8,500. I think that he'll probably go completely overlooked, and he's someone that I am targeting.
And if I'm going someone super low salaried with super long odds, I'll go Scott Stallings because of the ball striking. That's kind of what gets me interested here at $8,300. If we look at the past 36 rounds, he ranks 12th in the field in distance and 10th in approach per Fantasy National. And despite those good rankings, he has still managed to miss 4 of his past 6 cuts, which is not great, Bob. But nestled between there was a 3rd at Pebble Beach. And Stallings is volatile, so I'm not going to use him in cash. I don't think I need to use him in cash, but I think he's very much in play for tournaments at this salary of $8,300. Brandon, any thoughts for you on Scott Stallings?
He actually grades out really well for me. 16th in approach, 18th in opportunities gained, which is basically like your sort of scoring chances. That's on Fantasy National. Again, the reason that I filter him out is the Bermuda putting over a large sample, but at 8,300, I can't fault you if you need to spend down there. Stallings is an option for sure. So is Danny Willett. And just so that I say his name,
sure,
Corey Connors.
Yeah. Sexy Ryan Armour. He's back. $7,900. Got a little bit of distance. Good approach game. Don't think I overlooked Sexy Ryan Armour.
It's going to be Corey Connors week, and I won't have any of them. I can already sense it.
Yeah, it happens. But you could pick him as your winner for this week, Brandon, if you wanted to.
I will pass on that very intriguing offer.
Oh, well, I tried. We'll pick one golfer, anybody you want. Do you want to include Rory in that or no?
I mean, I guess we can. I'm not going to pick him because that's not fun for me. But
yeah. So anyone you want. And then one golfer whose odds are 60-1 or longer as of Tuesday morning on Betfair. Who are the two guys you're picking?
All right. How about we, because you won the bobble hat, you should get first pick.
Oh, is that how it works?
I think we should do that. That's probably better.
Okay. Can I pick my longer one first? And then you can pick whichever one you want, and then I'll pick my other one.
Yeah, go for it. And you said 60-1?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hao Tong Li. You talk trash on him by saying you didn't like him as much as someone else. I don't remember who it was. So Hao Tong Li is going to use that as a narrative and lift himself to victory at 66-1 to win and $9,400. Hao Tong Li is your champion of the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
Sorry, I'm making a note here. Hao Tong Li, I will take. I want to take Brooks, but
you can take a Brooks.
I'll go back with Brooks.
Okay. Did I pick him last week, or did you?
No, I did. You took Gary Woodland, who was not good. Yeah, I was hoping you took Gary Woodland. By the way,
what a terrible choice! Oh man, Jim.
Sorry, I took Graham McDowell. And you had Trey Mullinax, so.
Oh, that was a bad week. So bounce back with Hao Tong Li this week. On the top end, then, I'll take Rose.
Okay, and then for my longer pick, I will take RCB.
Okay. I did not realize he's 66. He's the same odds as Hao Tong Li. And we're doing Francesco versus Phil straight up, right?
Yeah, I'll make a very important note of that.
Do you want finishing points or FanDuel points for those two?
I'll go finish.
Okay, cool. Because Molinari is not exactly a birdie guy. I'm happy about that. Birdies are somewhat important in fantasy. Yeah. So, Molinari versus Phil. I've got Rose and Hao Tong Li. You got Brooks and RCB. Going head to head, I'm feeling
RCB,
pretty good.
RCB and Hao Tong Li, I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, and Hao Tong Li obviously wins, so I like it even more. I think that feels pretty good. A weird week, Brandon, because there's no Tiger, unfortunately, but you have a lot of options, and I think that gives you a lot of leeway to fade, whether it be someone like Jason Kokrak in the mid-range or someone like Rory McIlroy in the top end. I think if you get a read that someone is popular or going to be popular, you have options to fade them and go elsewhere, which I think makes this a nice little week here.
Yeah, and as much as I said I like Jason Day above Brooks, when it all came down to it, I chickened out and took Brooks over Day. But
it's hard to pass up, man.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of options. This is definitely a good enough event to tide us over until the players. So I am excited for this one. Great, great event last week.
Yeah.
Great event shaping up this week. Then the players. I've said it. I don't know. I just, it's fun. Golf's fun right now.
I got really confused when I saw Vijay Singh at the top of the leaderboard. I was like, is this his son? Like, who is this? Like, is this his son? I don't know what's happening here. Very confusing, but a fun event because everyone was in contention for so long there. So hopefully we see a duplicate of that this weekend at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Do not forget to subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. As a reminder, the Daily ISO goes up every weekday, breaking down NBA DFS with Tom Vecchio, the solo shot for baseball coming up later this month. As the baseball season gets underway, you can get all of those by subscribing, as mentioned, to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I am at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. Do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with your PGA DFS lineups for the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and back at you next week. We'll talk to you then. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.